Yeah.
All right, here we go. We're going to start.
Ooh, it's on. It's live.
Well, thank you very much for coming. Do we have the clicker?
Where'd the clicker go?
Oh.
Oh. Sorry. All right. Every time. Stealing the clicker.
Do I have to point this somewhere?
Uh-oh, clicker's broken.
Do I have to point it at something?
I hope not. There we go. Does it work now?
All right, welcome to the session of Going Mobile with C-Sharp with Visual Studio and Xamarin. Whoa, this is not me. All right.
Insert it for us.
All right, this is, I'm Miguel de Casa. I'm the Chief Technical Officer for Xamarin. And
I'm James Montemagno. I'm a developer evangelist at Xamarin. I've been doing .NET for not as long as you, Miguel.
No.
Not quite. I got there 10 years. You might be a little bit before got me in a little bit. But yeah.
Right, what you guys don't know is that I am actually crashing James' session. I don't know what happened. I was busy. I don't know what happened. But James was doing two sessions at Build, and at the last minute, 2 weeks ago, Joseph talked me into doing the presentation with James. And I figured we would do something fun this time around. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. Now, of course, before we can get to the fun part, we should give some background for those of you that don't know what, you know, that want to get some of the context. So what we're going to do today is we're going to show you an app built end-to-end. It was a very fun exercise. It took us 2 weeks to build.
2 weeks.
We finished last night.
Maybe a little bit this morning at 2 a.m. That's the point. When they told us Friday, I said, perfect, we got an extra day.
Yeah, and honestly, it was finished a little bit earlier, but when we're testing the app, we ended up consuming all of our free Azure credits, so we had to last night figure out how to move it out from my personal account to some.
Yeah, push to production.
Yeah, so no. Push to production. We didn't really think this through, but anyways, so we're gonna talk about that today. So,
and we're gonna talk a lot about the Xamarin platform, and this is where we're designing, developing, and integrating our love and passion for C# and .NET across iOS, Android, and of course, all of the Windows platforms as well. And we focus a lot on this is where we're in Visual Studio, using our designers, using our favorite libraries, and we're going to explore all of this as well. But Xamarin is actually a lot more than that, and when Miguel talks about that, we're going to show you everything in our platform. Last time Miguel came and spoke at Build, we had a lot of new products that were just launching for the first time, so you're actually going to see some brand new, exciting things since the last Build. For instance, it's not just about designing and developing your application, it's about testability as well. And that's where the Xamarin UI Test and Xamarin Test Cloud come in. Maybe you build automated C# scripts or Ruby scripts to test your iOS and Android applications, written with Xamarin or not. We also think also what happens after you ship your application. What happens when those free Azure credits go down? And make sure that you can monitor your application for not only analytics, but also crash reporting. So we're going to focus on some Xamarin insights for any of your applications, Mac, Windows, iOS, Android.
But also, I want to point out that we actually did usability testing. It was a short period, compressed period of usability testing, but we learned a couple of interesting lessons
from
this. But we'll talk about that later.
And we have an amazing platform to learn all of this as well, which we'll talk about, Xamarin University, with live interactive instructors. So this is Xamarin, your complete mobile solution, and anything you want to do in mobile.
All right.
I think Xamarin, why I fell in love with it four years ago, when I moved to Seattle to take a job as a solo mobile developer at a small startup, where they told me, hey, you got 2 months, it was 2 months back then, not 2 weeks, to build an iOS, Android, and Windows Phone and Windows Store application and demo at CES. I said, okay, yeah, sure, two months, plenty of time. Now I'm doing them in 2 weeks. It's because I was able to build out my shared C# backend. Everything I love, models, view models, SQL databases, RESTful service calls, and then craft a beautiful user interface for iOS, Android, and of course, Windows. But this application we built, now I've done a lot of things. I've done game programming, printer software, because everyone's got to write printer software for about 4 years.
Right, so the idea that we're expert today, and we'll get into the idea in a minute, actually contained a heavy dose of server work. Not only a heavy dose of server work, but a lot of interesting problems that we're not familiar when we started the project 2 weeks ago. I mean, we read the articles and, you know, you read all this stuff on the internet, but you don't really know what you're doing until you're doing it. So what was interesting this time around is not only that we shared C# logic between the UIs, but also we ended up sharing a bunch of code with the server, right? And right now it runs on Azure, but we're hoping to put it also on Mono running and the Corsula running on Linux. But we ended up actually sharing code between the client and the server, and yeah, we'll have some data there.
Yeah, it was the first time I ever did it, and I was amazed. Just, here's a client library, boom, just shared.
Yeah, because we tend to be client people. We build client apps, and this time around, to pull the demo together, we had to do end-to-end. So we learned entity framework.
Web jobs, we used SendGrid, we used
Service Bus. Because this is web scale.
We used push notifications for Google Cloud Messaging, yep. Azure notification hubs. I mean, really tying an entire, if you check boxes down, it's like all these services to bring a great story together.
Not only was fun, but it also gave me an excuse to miss every meeting from my boss.
That's true. I got to get more meetings. So that
right.
Was good.
So this is roughly what we explained last year. You shared C# code. But you have these pieces of code that are specific to each platform. You got some iOS-specific code to have a polished experience on iOS, a polished experience on Android, and a polished experience on Windows C#. Now, some of you might not necessarily need every bit of polish. So last year, we introduced, can we go to the next slide?
Yep.
We introduced an API called Xamarin Forms, which is an API that essentially gives you a way of describing the UI at a high level, and it will run with native controls on every platform. And while we built an app, James put this together in 2 days. We don't have time to show it today, but we did also build a companion administration app for what we're going to show you today, and it's 100% code sharing. Now, I said C# everywhere, but the reality is that everything that you can do today with C#, you can also do it with F#. I'm a big F# fan. But it's often difficult to put it in a slide. But I want to make sure that you guys know you can use both of them. So, and the way that we're doing this, for those of you that are not familiar, is as a C# developer, you're familiar with all these namespaces and all these APIs that exist here, right? There's a class of APIs, the boxes in blue, that are UI-specific APIs. These, in particular, are Windows APIs for the new platform. In the past, it was Windows Forms, and it was WPF, or maybe even ASP.NET. But these are presentation layer APIs or operating system-specific APIs. So the way that you have to think about how to build applications for Android and iOS is everything in gray is something that you can assume works everywhere, or everything that you can get on a Pickle Nuget. And when you go to iOS, you essentially have to use a different set of APIs. But it's essentially the same thing. You have to learn a new model for the UI, a new model for notifications, and things like that. And the same thing is repeated again with Android. But essentially, now you can immediately see how you could structure an application to be cross-platform and how you structure your code to work in this way. How do I switch to the next one? Which one is it?
Just right.
Right? Right.
How is it?
So, what is important for the approach that we're taking is that we're projecting the Android APIs and the iOS APIs, or the Mac APIs. We don't really talk that much about it, but we project all of these APIs into C# so you can consume the same set, everything that you could consume from Swift, Objective-C, or Java, you can consume from C#, so you're never at a disadvantage. If you want to learn how to build an application from the ground up using this model, and also get one of these cool C# shirts that the gentleman here in the front is using, or there was a gentleman with the F# somewhere.
They're nice. They're in red and yellow.
I picked
great
the colors. You can download this application, and when you download the application and run it, you can actually get the shirt and get an idea of how it's structured. So this is how it started.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago, Miguel said, I'm going to join you on stage. And I said, you got any app ideas? And this is where the conversation led.
And the problem is that it's a crowded space, right? So if we're going to build an app, we don't want this to be a throwaway app. We want this to be an application that will sustain, the test of time.
The test of time, yeah. Something that I want to open up every single day, use. We want to create a real-time communication application that was fun and new and would be an amazing demo, but also something that we could actually put out there. But like Miguel said, it's a huge crowded space. We all have multiple chat clients on our phones already. There's all these different services that are doing different things. And that was something that we said, well, what can we do different?
Right, so what do we do? Well, luckily for us, HBO just published Silicon Valley, the first whole season on HBO Now.
I'm a big fan.
That weekend, we loaded up, we binge-watched Silicon Valley, and we actually came out with a couple of lessons. how to build a successful startup. So we're going to share our experience with you guys. We're going to share our experience. And all of this is 2 weeks. Binge watching, come up with business plan, execute, deliver, demo on stage.
Test. And we tested and demo.
We tested and we did usability testing. So here are the parameters. And this is what we learned from Silicon Valley. So we learned a lot of lessons. I want to share those with you so you can go back home and start your own companies. So first thing, you want to find a large market. And you know, often we're focused on maybe we can, you know, maybe we can sell groceries or maybe we can get, you know, people into cabs, but that takes a lot of work.
If I take a pick a photo and filter it and ooh.
Yeah, we've done the filter app. It's a done thing. So we honed in this idea. There's 78 million children in America. It's an untapped market. There's 1.9 billion children in the world. This is a big market. In fact, I think that when Terry Myerson says we're going to get Windows in a billion devices, he's not thinking big enough. It's going to take 3 years. I am thinking big. Also, when we got this information from Wikipedia.
It's at an all-time high right now.
It is an all-time
high. All-time high. So this is the perfect time to get into the market.
So take it with a grain of salt. We don't really know if it's at an all-time high, but that's what Wikipedia said.
If you read it on Wikipedia, you know it's true.
But this is the key. For every child, there's on average 1.8 concerned parents. Very concerned parents. This is a big market, guys. This is a huge market. We're talking about 6 million people. So this is what we're going to do. We're going to go after that large market. Second, we need to find a differentiator. How is this different from WhatsApp, from Facebook Messenger, from all of this stuff that it's out there? You know, everyone has their features. We need to find something important. So we found something that was important to us, which is families. So our messaging application is focused on families, all right? I'm a father, I'm a parent, and you know, ever since I had kids, I start to freak out like the character in The Simpsons, where she asks, is anybody gonna think of the children?
You gotta think of the children.
Yeah, exactly. And then we need to find a product market fit, right? I learned this again in Silicon Valley. You need to find something that the market demands. And what we figured out is that while there's all kinds of parenting styles, right? Parenting is a little bit like Ruby on Rails. It's an opinionated set of principles, right? So you might not necessarily, thank you. So you might not necessarily agree with all the principles, but we're gonna build an app that is focused on a particular set of parents. And if that's 10% of 20%, that's still a lot of percent out of a billion people. So all I gotta do is target that demographic. And the demographic that we're targeting is the helicopter parenting demographic. Yeah. These are parents that wanna constantly monitor what's happening with their kids, that wanna make sure that they grow up as responsible adults, that wanna have a happy childhood. So that's our target market, really. That's what we're doing. And then we needed to find a way of growing our market to make this thing go viral and to make people use our application. So we're gonna use the best industry practices that exist today. We're gonna gamify parenting, and we're gonna do it through three vectors. We're gonna use points that children can earn and they can exchange for things like sleepovers, play dates.
Games. Yeah, I mean, you know,
candy,
new games, whatever you want to do.
Trip to Disneyland.
Ooh, now that's the ultimate reward, really.
If I learned one thing is that badges are the key to everything. Mm. So we're going to give them badges.
Exchange those points also for badges and stickers and things like that.
Right. And also, I'm a guy with social responsibility. If you follow me on Twitter, I kind of always have this social slant to everything that I do. And we want to use this app to bring good to the world, right? So we're going to shame parents into becoming better parents. The idea is, can you make it to the top of the list, right? And I have a friend that is always competing with these other parents, like, oh, they just got this house, or, oh, good damn it, they just got the dog, and you know. So kids are going to have a chance to rate their parents, right? And they're going to have a chance to basically say, hey, dad, it's just not happening for me. What, you know, Johnny. So we're going to use all of these properties to essentially, you know, hope for a better world. So let me introduce our application. Our application is called KinderChat. It's a chat application focused on the children. And now James is going to show. We're going to show this on the emulator. We have it running on devices, but to project it, it's going to work better if we show it in the emulator.
Yep.
Is that what we want to do?
Yeah. You want to talk about the real part of it, and while I get into the demo here, let me switch over to 5. Is we'll just get it up and running. And Miguel, you just kind of walk through what's going on. So we're going to launch it here. We have our iOS 6 simulator on the left-hand side, and we have our Xamarin Android player with Lollipop here. So let's go ahead and load these up. So when you start up the application, you get to pick your favorite color, blue or pink currently, or other themes that you may have. And here we can see we have a list of, on the bottom, our chats, our friends that are on here, beautiful material design, back and forth, and we can add friends back and forth.
Yeah, I want you guys to notice, we're actually using the new material design from Google. It looks pretty gorgeous.
Really beautiful pull to refreshes.
Yeah, we put a lot of nice touches, and each one of these is a native app on each platform.
So we see Joseph here is in the crowd. Well, let's do this first. Let's go ahead and have a little chat here. Oh, I'm ready. I am ready.
All right. Is this live on my Kinder chat?
I think so.
All right. Hey there. You're probably better off talking to Joseph.
Yeah, I'm just talking to myself now, and that's no fun.
This is great. Which one is great? The problem is that I have a ton of friends now.
Well, let's go ahead and add. Let me add Miguel. So we're going to go to my friends tab here.
All right.
I'm going to pull up and pick from my contact lists, and there's Miguel.
Oh. All right.
Let's see if that worked. Perhaps. Need help? Ooh. Things are going okay. There we go. Oh, we found Miguel. We'll add him to our contacts. Friend added. There you are. A little sideways, but yeah, now you can start. Hey, Miguel.
Can I send you a message?
Yeah.
All right.
Let's go there. And we see, so now I have multiple chat conversations going back and forth.
Oh, are you this guy?
All right. I am Joey, yes.
Sup, dog? Sup, doge? It's a new way of saying dog.
A dog. There all we right. go. Boom. Picture comes right on in. Back and forth.
Now, I want to tell you one thing. The entire backend. So now you're thinking, well, how is this different?
Seems like a chat application.
It seems like a chat application. So what is unique about this, right? I could talk about how we scale this thing. We actually hope that this is going to scale big times because everybody on Silicon Valley knows you're going to be web scale, right?
Yep.
So we picked Azure. We use Entity Framework for the database. We have a REST endpoint that actually manages everything that has to do with friends, collections of friends, and so on. And then we use WebSocket service workers to actually do the live message exchange. We haven't plugged this in, but you can also get a little bubble when you're typing, so we're going to have that feature. So the experience is great. But what makes this unique and what makes this special is that we're really concerned about privacy. We live in a world where security is a top concern. It's a top concern for parents. And WhatsApp actually launched without any cryptography at all. They were just sending plain text messages. Not only they were sending plain text messages and you could intercept them, but you could also inject them. They were susceptible to man-in-the-middle attacks. So we wanted to have something that was 100% secure. So while Azure provides a lot of facilities for actually managing identities for you, we created our own identity system with a couple of design principles. First, every time I send a message to James, I am using his public key to encrypt the message. So all I have is his public key. I encrypt the message, and I send it to him. Also,
thank you.
This is an app aimed for children, right? So we didn't want children to remember their passwords or have a password manager. It's a little bit too complicated. So the way that you can sign up, James Montemagno can actually sign up for the service on multiple devices just using his email address or a phone number to confirm his identity. So essentially, he can have a phone, an Android, a watch.
Anything I want.
Anything you want, and they're all linked together, and there's never a password to remember. That's why we had to build our own identity system. So we built that identity system. But most importantly, I think that the key, and if we go to the profile, we'll see this. The key for helicopter parenting really is being able to monitor the communications of your children. So what you do is when you click this little link button, you can link to a parent email address the first time. And when you do that, what we do is we integrate the public key of the parent into the identity. So every time that you send a message to James, dad or mom gets a message. And this is all built on the principle that if you have nothing to fear, if you have nothing to hide, you have nothing to fear. And we just want to breed a culture where people are okay sharing this information with their parents. Now, you might be thinking, as a kid, well, maybe I don't want mom or dad to know what I'm up to. So this is where the gamification piece comes into play. So we'll show you what we have so far. Right now, what we're doing, the more you use the app, the more points you earn. So essentially, if you're trying to escape the system by going to Facebook Messenger, you're not going to get those points. You're not going to get that sleepover. You're not going to get that toy that you wanted. So if you want to get the points, you got to use KinderChat. Second thing, also, we integrate a system where you actually get you get to claim the things that you've done. I struggle with my daughter with broccoli. She does not eat broccoli. There's no way of getting broccoli. There's no way of getting my daughter to eat broccoli.
Exactly. So when you're on here, your child then can then say, I'd like to approve a task, and then you get points for this that you approve then later on as a parent, which is really great. So they're pending
That's
points.
Right.
So I can't just sit here and click, oh, I want to keep, you know, brushing my teeth and get points. Those are points that are pending currently in the system.
Right. And as a parent, what I can do is I can come to my Apple Watch. So for example, if you click on finish homework and can go to my Apple Watch, Apple Watch, I launch my app, and then I can both monitor the conversations, right, or I can approve tasks. So in this case, I could approve, it looks like he finished the homework. But if my daughter said, I ate the broccoli, it's like, I don't think so, right? So this is one of the components of the gamification that we're going to introduce into the app.
Yeah, additionally, we have it so when you can select your different avatar, or for instance, you can come in, pick a photo from the gallery, take a photo, so maybe you want hipster cat over here, that'll upload the photo to the server and pull it back down.
Yeah.
And the same thing's true over here on Android, and you can pick from the gallery as well. So these great native features, but experience, so actually identity, so in your friends, you can see, oh, is that really Joey or is that Biggs over there, like actually doing this? So the gamification ties in, and not only just am I doing it, but actually using the application on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. So that's the central notification hub. When I was a kid, I was a huge video game nerd. I can't lie, that's all I did, I loved it. And what kept me coming back are those achievements. That's why I think I loved WoW so much when it came out. It was like micro achievements, like, oh, I'm just getting stuff all the time. Then I can exchange these for things in the real world.
Right, and now we don't have time to demo that. Maybe if you guys stick around after this. But this is the native app that we're giving out for the kids. The idea is that it has a very polished experience, very native experience. But you know, for the head of the family, for the head of the clan or the tribe, we've built a Xamarin Forms application, which is mostly aimed to run on the desktop, right? The head of the channel will probably have a desktop. We also have Android and iOS, but we didn't really want to spend too much on the UI. That's what you built.
Yeah.
And it's an app for managing your child's relationships. So, you know, when Joey gets a little bit, starts to get ideas and start to get bad ideas into our kid, you know, it's like a bonsai. You gotta cut around the edges, you know, cut a relationship here and there. And you get to monitor the communication, say, maybe not. Maybe you're not going to go play with this kid. So we'll show you the app later on.
Yeah. So should we walk through the solution?
Right.
Take a look
at it? This is a product. Now, let us show you how we build this puppy. And I think we need to switch to the slides.
No, we're right
for
here.
That.
No, we're right here. We're good.
Where are the slides? No. We're not doing the slides.
We'll take a look at the solution really quick. So inside of here, I have analysis, I have a console, I have an Android, iOS, my WatchKit application, and I have my shared server code as well. So we can actually see a lot going on over here as I scroll down. We have all my view models, so each page of the application. So it's MVVM. If you came to my earlier talk, how many of you are familiar with MVVM? Quite a few. If you're not, just like MVC, more Vs, more Ms.
Well, no, but the idea is the following.
No?
The idea, the idea
that's,
of
that's
the
how
MVVM.
I learned it.
Well, good. The idea of the MVVM model is that you split your application in the part that actually stores the information. That's typically the model. And on the other end of the spectrum, the platform-specific bits, the view, right? In the middle, you have the glue that brings these two worlds together, the view model. So it's a way of structuring your application. And it was kind of fun to build this application because we would add a feature. For example, James would add a feature to Android. He would put it in the view model and in his view, and the next morning, Rostam, that was working in the iOS app, would just pick it up and fill it in. And it was very nice to see how this app was being developed very rapidly. And all of the logic, all of the data binding and the information was shared. So the UI, when we had to do the iOS piece or the Android piece, we just had to wire up the UI. And that was very interesting.
I remember getting on the Slack in the morning and having a conversation with Rustam, and he's overseas, and I said, he's like, oh, I'm going to go implement this page. I said, don't worry. All the logic's done. Call this one method. Everything's done. Link to parent, you're done. Uploading a photo, all handled automatically. In fact, going into the profile view model is actually really interesting. We have different interface for data management, so actually storing things in a local SQLite database. We have public getters and setters. So some of this code is going to look very familiar to you. We're using different things in here. But if I actually pull down into some of these methods, for instance, let me go ahead and say pick photo for here. The logic for picking and uploading the actual photo and taking the photo is all in shared code. Since we're .NET developers, we can abstract away all the hard bits of iOS and Android and create a common interface to say, pick a photo asynchronously. Goes out to iOS or Android under the hood, takes a photo, picks a photo, and then we upload that to our server automatically. So we don't have to worry about writing those iOS or Android bits. It's handled for us, and it's a clean, maintainable set of code all here as well, which is really amazing. And then, of course, we're building out the user interfaces inside of Visual Studio. This is our storyboard designer. As you can see, it is pretty nicely laid out, very large, and we can dive in. When you go in, you can actually come in and modify any of the properties. So if I dive into this page, for instance, and go one-to-one, I could come in, select different properties, add different buttons and widgets, and modify the toolbar. I have a full toolbox here on the right-hand side, so I can drag and drop any of the different controls into the views. We can see how we kind of laid this out. Some of the pages are more manual code behind, but we can see here the different cells that we're creating and then filling in the UI and the code behind. Then, of course, the same thing is true for our Android application, but instead of using a storyboard, we have Android XML files, which are very much like XAML files, but just without data binding built into them. So very much the same. We have our first our login page, actually when we're signing up to send an email and a nickname, and we can flip and we can drag different items around on here. So if I wanted another button, just search for a button, drag it down and get guidelines and drag it in. And what that's doing behind the hood is generating all of the Android XML for me to actually get this here. But what I really love about the structure of this code is that in the code behind, for instance, if I dive into, let's say, my profile fragment, there's really not that much code. What I'm doing here is I'm just having a little pick. Whenever I click the avatar, I just call in and say, would you like to pick a photo or take a photo? And I call out to my view model, pick a photo, take a photo. And the rest is handled for me automatically. Most of it is just setting up the user interface. And what we can see here down at the bottom is I subscribe to property change notifications. So whenever I upload a new avatar, I get notified and I react to the UI. Whenever it is busy, so I'm updating, I'm uploading something, I just react to that natively. So the bulk shared code is now automatically scaled. So what was great is if we're finding a bug in one product, you simply fix it, write a unit test around it, and now it's good to go.
And I think that there's a couple of interesting things. We also built a console version, so we could test this easily from the console. We're Unix people, so we do like that. We also have here the WatchKit application, so that's the one that I just showed you a second ago.
Do you want to show them the storyboard, maybe?
Yeah, you want to? I don't know where it is. It's in the WatchKit app and it's
interface.
Puppy. Yeah. And the last row there at the end is there's a code that we're sharing with the server, which we have in a separate solution because we're developing in parallel. But that's where all the shared code is. So this is the storyboard for the Apple Watch.
We have different images, so when you tap in, and then you can navigate through, get your entire message log, and then also here the different task titles that are coming in, so broccoli.
You did your homework, that sort of thing.
Yeah, and the server code is here as well. So when we see down here, we have the Apple Watch kits, but also the server client, and then the shared code, and that's shared across everything. But you know, when you go in and you look at what we're using, and I actually look at my references, I think this is what's really interesting. I just go to Manage NuGet Packages, and then I just go to install packages.
Oh, NuGet you have package. Way too many packages.
It's NuGet package. It's doing something. Uh-oh, NuGet. Well, good old NuGet.
All right, so that was
good old NuGet. What I love about Visual Studio is that it loads relatively pretty quick. There we go, that's not bad. Well, so if I drop down my references, should I risk it?
No, just show the reference. We have them there. Zoom that puppy out.
So you can see we're using all of the Android support libraries down here, Google Play services for cloud messaging. We're using a bunch of my libraries I wrote for cross-platform settings and the slider tabs and action button, SQLite. We're using different media plugins, Google Cloud Messaging, in your HTTP, System XML, validation, web for socket. So we're using all of these amazing libraries that are out there in the .NET ecosystem that we can take in. And PCL Crypto, which was very cross-platform. That's the one to point out. It's actually by Aaron Arnott, I believe, from Microsoft. It's a cross-platform crypto library, and it uses the native iOS and Android cryptography systems to be lightning quick to do all the encryption.
Yeah, and in fact, we had a couple of slides about the whole crypto thing, but when we looked at the slide, it was just boxes and arrows and more boxes, and like, we can't show this stuff. It's just too boring. But it's actually a fascinating problem to solve, how to make your communication safe. It's a little bit more complicated than just, oh, we have a public key. Turns out that you gotta get some padding and you get some forward secrecy and interesting stuff. So is there anything else we wanna show from the solution?
I think we're good.
I think we're good?
Yeah.
All right, let's switch back over. And do you have my, what do we got here?
Clicker. So we did that.
So we did this. Now, we talked a little bit about the easy onboarding, and the reason why we wanted to design some easy onboarding was because, was for a couple of reasons. First, kids don't remember passwords. Second, we couldn't use Twitter or Facebook because, 4 years and 5-year-olds are technically not eligible to get accounts on these networks. So we wanted a system that was simple. And what we did is we used Twilio on the back end on Azure to send SMS messages for confirmation of your phone number or email addresses.
We use a SendGrid from the Azure store, Azure Market.
That's right.
So whenever you enter an email, it would automatically send that out. The same thing as if I invited Miguel and he hadn't signed up, he would actually get a notification. So onboarding and inviting your friends became very simple there as well.
I think we touched on this, but let me just... We did touch on this. I kind of messed up the flow. Sorry about that. But I think that what is important to remember here is that every minute that your child spends on KinderChat is a minute less that you have to worry about your kid using another chat application that is not monitored. And also, not every mom has a data center to crack the strong cryptography used by other systems. Even if you wanted to, sometimes might be out of your budget. So I think that we're really delivering here a lot of value for families that want to keep an eye on what's going on there.
And what's interesting, if you go back to that last screen really quick, is that gamification in this actually happened relatively quick. Miguel said, we should gamify this really quick. It was 101. Why do we miss it?
Yes.
So we had to be able to prototype extremely fast our user interface.
Right.
So we came up with this beautiful spec, and we started to play around and mess around with the numbers. What happens when the kid gets millions of points and wants to trade things in? So we needed a way to easily prototype as well, which was very interesting.
So this is where the cycle of build, compile, debug got a little bit annoying. So we actually gave it a shot at a new component in Xamarin that we're introducing today called Xamarin Inspector. And Xamarin Inspector is similar to the Chrome or Firefox or IE tools where you're able to inspect a live app, right? You're able to issue some real-time C# commands or F# commands against a running app, and you get to inspect the internal state of the application very much like you do on the browser.
On the browser.
This works on Windows and works on Mac. It can do it for Android, it can do it for iOS, it can do it for WPF applications and Mac applications. Because we couldn't get VMware running with the Android emulator at the same time, we're gonna do this demo on Mac. So let's show that. And I've never done this live, so we'll see how this goes. So this is, what you see here on the left side is the inspector. I've already launched it, and I have the application running on the left. And the inspector is really this interactive shell to C#. It's using Monozyme TrackSheet Shell. It's still not using Roslyn. We're using the same engine that we had for a while. And you know, you can issue very simple commands like 2+2. What is interesting about this, and you know, this is a you know, it's a this is just C# plain C# here, right line. Hello. Well, actually, let me see if I can do this, Miguel. And let me see what happens if I do this, C#6. Hello, A. Ooh. Well, it works. Well, that is pretty nice. That's a nice surprise. but let me show you. This is actually running in process. What? Aaron?
Close and reopen it.
File new.
Ah, I'll relaunch the simulator maybe.
It's okay, let me kill this puppy. Well, and now you can see how the application can fail.
Ah.
What happened to this thing?
So go shrink it down, view.
View? Yeah.
No, window.
Oh no, this one. Window, scale. 75?
There we go.
All right. So I launched the inspector again, and now let me attach to this process. You know what? I might have been debugging. I might have been actually inspecting the app itself. So let me just resize this puppy to the right. So I just wanted to not have to do this in front of you. It's a little bit embarrassing. Anyways, let me see. Using UI kit. All right, we're on the right process. Woo! So using System.io, you've seen this before, but I think that we have a couple of nice features here because this is not really running in its own, communicating with a target process. It's actually running inside the application. So for example, I can say directory .get files, TMP. I placed there a little icon for my convenience. So I'm gonna load a file, image.fromfile. TMP veggie.
You got live IntelliSense.
Yeah. And when we load the image, we have a special renderer that can load the image. You can also use other elements like UI color.red, and it will always render the colors right in the right there in the UI. Let me load again the image, but assign it to a variable. All right, so I keep it around. And similar to what you do with with a web inspector, you can also use this little button here to select one of the elements in the UI. So I'm going to select this little guy, and it assigns it, when you click on the image, it assigns it to the variable selected view, right? So I can explore some of the properties on that thing, for example, the frame, right? It would tell me it's the position, but now I can say selected view, and I know that it's an image view. I can say the image can be the broccoli. So now I can change the broccoli live. Thank you. Let me show you a little bit something a little bit different. This actually shows one of the problems that we had here. So we have this label here that has it's obviously being chopped. We have a little bug there. So I would like to select this thing, but the problem is that this is actually a composite view made of a ton of other little things. So when I try to select it, it's actually a little bit obnoxious to get. It's a UI view. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go here and I'm going to fetch a 3D view of the target app. So I'm going to select the view that I want, and that you can see how it's getting composed there. I'm going to select that view, and now selected view. I'm going to say, what is that? Well, that it's a is that what I want? Let me see. No, I don't think that's the one that I wanted. Let me get this puppy. I think it's that this one. Little guy. Okay. So let me go there, and it's a UI label. So I can say text, and I see that it's a large number. Right? So one of the things that I could do is now, for example, I could just set this flag, adjust font size to fit width. This is an iOS property. This is not something I did for them. It's just an iOS property. And that's effectively the box. So I can go customize it, see what's wrong. And in fact, I could just have done that directly from here, right? I could have just selected a UI element, and it's a little bit difficult now that I have that I don't have a big display here to play with. But you can just go here and see what the properties are and what is going on with your component, right? So let me go back and select that because I think I selected something else now. Let me select this little guy here. And now we can go back. And you immediately can see that this is a problem again, right? My text now is being left aligned. So I can just try here, text alignment equal UI text alignment dot center. And there it goes. So, so all of these are actually iOS properties. It is running on the target process. So you can explore all the properties, change all the properties, see what is going on. We're adding support for monitoring network CPU usage and other things as extra tabs. And it's we're going to make it available as a NuGet, as a NuGet, so that you can actually very easily add it to any application. So the distribution of the software will be a NuGet, that you can install the NuGet, comes with the app, you can run it, and then you can start inspecting. Now, the other thing that I just wanted to do, because I'm trying to send a subliminal message to my daughter. So I want to pick this collection view here. So let me see, selected view, the background view. Oh, no, that's not what I wanted. I want a background color. Let me pick maybe this one. So what do we have here? Selected view, background color. So I can say UI color from pattern F. And now I have some broccoli on the background. Not very important, but I thought that that I could do that if she earned some points. So let's go back to our slides. So that's our Xamarin Inspector, and you'll be able to use it to do Android, iOS, and both Windows and Mac, as well as WPF and Mono Mac. So the next challenge is, right, so we got a great application, and now we want to deliver a great experience everywhere, right? We want to make sure that our kids get the best experience possible, and dads that got their Apple Watch just in time because they stayed up until 3 a.m. can get their can get everything running. So,
yeah. We've been showing it all on really higher end devices,
right.
Like Lollipop and iOS 8 and all this stuff. But
that's iPhone 6 Plus.
iPhone 6 Plus, naturally, got to have it. What was interesting is when I was a kid, you know, I didn't get the latest and greatest technology at all. I mean, I always wanted it, but I always had to wait a little bit or kind of trickle down a little bit.
Right, and what happens is this, right? When you look at the Android market, and we know that in Android, fragmentation is a little bit of a problem. But when you look at the Android market, we got this data, I think, from Google a couple of nights ago. But this is roughly what the market is for parents, right? We got a bunch of people on KitKat, some people in Jelly Bean, Ice Cream Sandwich, Gingerbread, and Froyo. And when we're thinking about parents, this is OK. But the reality is that kids don't really get the latest device, right? As soon as a new device comes out, this is roughly what happens, right? The 1% of the children of the 1% will certainly get the 5%, the 5.0 lollipop, but what happens is that the fathers basically give their old devices to your children, right? So you end up with this, you end up with kids where it's actually very important to support things like Gingerbread or Ice Cream Sandwich. They might be old devices, but you know, I'm not giving my 2-year-old toddler a iPhone 6 Plus. I'm going to give him the iPhone 3GS that is still running around in the house.
And this is actually a challenge for us as developers because, of course, I have the latest and greatest phones myself. So when I was testing KinderChat for the very first time, I was on my Moto X, I had KitKat, I was testing on Lollipop simulators, all the different Lollipop design with material design. I was very excited about it.
Yeah.
Well, we actually started getting it into a few Xamarin's hands and actually finding out that there were some issues out in the field. So we had to create a dedicated suite to test the user interface to make sure that what we wanted to have happen was actually happening in the apps and scaling on all these different devices.
Yes.
So we didn't know what different devices these kids would be running. So that's why we actually have an entire product that we mentioned a little bit earlier, Xamarin Test Cloud. And we're going to be writing automated user interface scripts all in C#. either in Visual Studio or Xamarin Studio, to automate our user interface. So when I log in, do my login process work? What happens when I enter an email address? Don't enter an email address. Is the UI reacting? But then also, take those tests, run it locally on a simulator, or ship it to the test cloud, which has hundreds upon thousands of physical devices for iOS and Android. So actually, let me just show this here.
So which machine do you need?
We're on 7, please.
7?
Yep. So I'm over here on Xamarin Studio. You can do this in Visual Studio as well. And I still have my entire application that we can see here on my iOS, Android. The same solutions, same projects, open in both Visual Studio and Xamarin Studio. I'm here on a Mac. Now, I have a KinderChat test project, and it's just NUnit. So if you're familiar with any of the unit testing frameworks here, we built on top of NUnit, but we created Xamarin UI tests. So inside of here, we have a package, Xamarin UI tests, and NUnit. So let's say I want to start and test the sign-up flow. So inside of here, what's really nice, I can take screenshots along the way, but it's a way of selecting visual elements that are displayed, not just by pixels of X and Y, but actually the identifiers that we're displaying. So we have here for being able to enter text, querying different buttons, are they being displayed?
Let me take a step back. So what's happening here is that this unit test is using an API that will communicate with the remote process and will ensure that certain things are taking place. Mm-hmm. So we want to make sure that the app runs. And it's a unit test that is actually testing the behavior of the app live. It's not really testing like those, 2 + 2 provides for. It's actually testing what's happening in the app.
You already have your business logic tests already. This is the user interface part. So we can test what's happening on the server. But for instance, let me just go over here in my test runner and actually just run this test. This is the sign up process. So I want to make sure that I want to be able to successfully sign up here, and I'm not touching anything. We can stand back. And we see I'm entering text back and forth inside of here. And we can see the button enable or disable with my regex that I have, entering different pins and continuing on. And what's really interesting, we saw the entire user interface change just right inside of there, and that's all done in code. Additionally, we tested another one for doing messages. So what happens now after the sign-up process, but I also want to send messages? So here we go. We test that flow again. And we have tools built right in to actually have a live interactive REPL, so you can actually build out your tests and then copy them right into Visual Studio. So here I can just open up, talking to Paul Betts. He's a good guy. I like him. There we go. Back and forth. But what's interesting here is I'm running them locally on a simulator, which means I can smoke test any of my applications right here. However, what happens when I actually want to do more with them? So I've done my smoke tests, and what you can do now with these tests is simply load them up to the Xamarin Test Cloud. And here's all the different devices. You can go in and see all the different devices, iOS, KitKat, Jelly Bean, et cetera, et cetera. We took that same test that was running local. We have our KinderChat for Android right here in the Xamarin Test Cloud. We did a few different test suites, and we actually found some very glaring issues. We can see we ran 4 different tests for changing friends, password switching, and we see that we have a test that's failing on 10 different devices.
And what was actually nice is that when we started this thing, we said, we're going to show Test Cloud, and we need to find a way of making this fail. We actually didn't have to do that because when we wrote the test suite, it turns out that we did have a failure, a natural failure. So we're going to show you a natural failure that occurred when we were building it.
Exactly. So here is the application running on here. This is a successful run, but you can see it's running on 80 plus different devices. I can go into any single device, get a full screenshot snapshot of it, so I could upload that later, get console logs along the way of anything that's happening on that device, and then go back. So here, for instance, I could actually just navigate down, and I get updates.
So you can see every step that happened, the same steps that you saw happening locally, you can see them on Test Cloud executed on all these devices.
But this one was interesting. We actually ran into a few issues right off the bat with actually just smaller, really form factors of trying to open the home page. But here, for instance, I log in, I select a user, and this all seems good. I send a message. The message was sent, so we can see I'm actually on the side over here. I want to make sure that I can go back to the main messaging page. So in this command, I'm actually tapping this button right here, the back button, or the up arrow, if you will. So when I tap that, we can see that it actually fails on all of these top row devices. And what's really intriguing is that it was failing to go back on all of our ice cream sandwich devices. I had implemented some bad functionality for an API that didn't exist, and it was crashing the application, and it couldn't continue on. Now, the rest of the devices that were successful to go through that step go here. But now I can dive in and get more information about these specific test failures of what was going on. And obviously here, there's nothing there, but we can see that if I go back, oops, skipped. Let's go to one of these that was failing. I can get the snapshot. I can see the test failures that were going on as well here, which is really powerful. And this is how we actually solved that problem. Mm-hmm. I just switched a little bit of logic as well. So that's the power of writing user interface scripts that test the user interface, ship it to the test cloud, test all these devices, but then we actually shipped KinderChat.
Right, we actually shipped KinderChat. The first beta, I think, we were trying on Monday, and immediately we started finding problems, crashes, and we started capturing those. So we're using Xamarin Insights, which is it's a framework that allows you to log exceptions, track your exceptions, errors, or send analytics about what's happening to your application. So while we had originally added things for the sake of examining what was happening with the application, we also got capture all the crashes. So we're going to show you what we capture here.
Yeah, and let me actually just show you how easy it was to get up and running. So inside of my main application, I added a NuGet package. It's all just Nuget's.
Yeah.
So here I just have an initialize in my Android application. Same thing over here, Xamarin Insights. And then in my shared code, it's a portable class library. So everything inside of my shared library, if I dive into here and go to my helpers, services, there we go. I have a logger utility, you probably wrote some of these, that I track, report different exceptions, or I can even track time. Mm-hmm. So what's interesting here is that we got KinderChat, we have our dashboard, and this is interesting. We see something horrible happened here, about 8,000 warnings and 11 crashes. And what's interesting here is I actually see crashes reported over time. So these are our session datas of how many sessions are occurring in the application compared to the crashes. So this is actually pretty good. We had some early development crashes, and we caught things early on. We got a lot of users in, but we had a lot of warnings that we're reporting as well. So if I actually go down to my count, we can see that I'm actually just have a bunch of socket exceptions because our server went down. I have a full stack trace. I have a rich stack trace that I can message down when we're trying to send the message that was in here and all my different device information. This was happening on a Nexus 4, for instance. But let me go into a crash.
Yeah. And this crash is what happened yesterday, right?
Yeah.
We're trying in one of these personal Azure. I mean, Xamarin has its own set of Azure machines. We have a bunch of those. But it happened that we just started developing on our own personal accounts. So we ran out of credit on that one. So these crashes were actually us running out of credit on the Azure machines.
Exactly. Well, one that was really interesting that helped me was I was using notification. I forgot some different, so I had some debug in there that was actually setting some different properties. So when I went to production, I actually forgot to take those flags out, and I got a notification of it. And we can see here, I fixed it and pushed out a new version, and some people didn't update, so we'll blame them. But now I can come in and say that this is closed, and that goes reports back. But additionally here, we can see all the different users that are coming in, so it's all anonymous data that's coming in, and we can track the different sessions that are occurring in the application, so starting, the arguments, the different messages that are coming back from the server.
And it's important here, what we're doing here, what is important is that you can see when an application starts and when it gets sent to the background and resumed. So essentially, you have a history of what happened with your application. And as you add insights to your application, you can see what was the workflow that might have led to a crash or might have led to a particular condition in the application.
Exactly.
Right? So it's a little bit of it helps you with the archaeology of a bug.
And then, of course, we track some different events. So here we can see the average time for uploading avatars.
You should probably zoom in so they can get an idea.
Oh, yeah. Let me do this right here. There we go. How's that? So we actually get nice daily events back and forth. So sending messages. How often were people sending messages? We can see that a lot were here, and then the servers went down, and that was no good. And then we came back up. And you can really see, this is exactly when we put it in just over a little week ago. But we're having timings here as well. So how long did it take to actually save a profile back to the server, upload a photo, or search for a friend inside of here as well? And when was the last time it occurred? And this is really important, because what if I introduce new app logic into here that was searching for a friend, and I actually broke this? I can see in when I push out a new update, now everything's taking longer, so let me go back and rehearse that. But we saw some interesting things as well. You can track different statistics in here as well. So you can add additional attributes, such as maybe popular usernames, the avatars you select, or different themes.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think with the theme, what we figured out at the beginning, we just had a label that said pink or blue. And what we immediately discover is that our toddler audience was not ready to read pink or blue. So once we changed that to pink or blue colors, it became very obvious, very simple to pick up.
Exactly. Right? Yep. And exactly, so we see this shift over time, and actually using this analytics to improve the application, at the same time getting the managed and native crash reports with just that single line of code. If you had just initialize, you get all of your managed and native crashes right there.
Yeah, and I think the other piece that we learned is that toddlers can't really use a messaging application. The result was undistinguishable from the encrypted version. So we gotta rethink some of these assumptions.
And of course, you have all the other analytics that you'd expect, app versions, different OS variations. So you can see which ones are actually important here as well.
And there was something interesting we saw yesterday, which was, you still have it here. When we started load testing this on Test Cloud, we wanted to load test the application, load test the servers. You can see this big increase because we were using our Denmark data center. So that's when you see that spike in blue, that's our data center there.
Perfect. Yeah. Let's go back to the slides real quick.
So let's wrap. I think we're going to wrap this up. How much time we have left?
Very little. A few minutes left.
What
was it? Yeah. And so what was really interesting is that, so now we're getting ready. We're finishing the slide deck. And I think what was always interesting to me, even when I shipped my very first applications, my boss came to me and said, well, it's great, James, that we have iOS, Android, and Windows, but what's the shared code that you're sharing? What's the maintainability of this? So I told Miguel this last night. I said, oh, I can run those stats, no big deal. I have the little app that does it. And we actually got our code sharing statistics for this application, again, built in 2 weeks between a few. So we're sharing about 50% code across all platforms on iOS and 70% on Android. What's really interesting, again, with that client-server relationship, is that 20% of the heft of the server and the client were shared. So that's a shared, that gray right there is a shared layer across all of our applications. Yep. And the iOS one is a little bit lower because we spent a lot more time with a lot of customizations and some animations and tying in a lot of different things. So we're adding more platform-specific things that we could abstract away later on to get this even higher.
Yep. So
now, of course, that's just some of the statistics. But I'm sure you guys want to learn exactly how to get started. Obviously, go to Xamarin.com, download your free trial, get up and running if you haven't already, which you all should. But of course, we have Xamarin University, which I hinted at a little bit before. So everything here, what's interesting about Xamarin University is I actually take Xamarin University class because mobile is moving so fast. There's new operating systems. There's Android Wear, Apple Watch, new versions of iOS, and Android coming out all the time. Xamarin University enables you to get up and running, maybe not knowing anything of C# or iOS or Android. And you sit down with live interactive instructors and become a fully Xamarin certified developer. That's xamarin.com/university. And with that, thank you.
Thank you very much.
If anyone has any questions, feel free. We'll be here.